Come be a part of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics with your host, Dr. Ed Holliday. Hear the voices of liberty speaking all across America. Doc Holliday provides thought-provoking interviews and commentary about the issues and actions that are afflicting this country and what we need to do to get America back on track. Get fired up. Get inspired. Get on board with Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right now.
Once again, that's the sound of rock cracking, and you've got Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics right here on www.webtalkradio.net. We're glad to have you. New listeners, thank you for tuning in, and let me just assure you, every Monday morning, you can go and you'll have another show uploaded to listen to of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, and I want to let you know, we appreciate you sharing with your friends and neighbors because we're growing because of you. And we will help mold the future of this country by working together, you and me, and with others around the country, to make sure we get our values into place and that America once again will speak from the soul of we the people. Now, telling you that, I've got to tell you about this great show you're about to listen to. We have Larry Pratt, GunOwnersOfAmerica.org. Now, Larry will be speaking with us about Eric Holder, some of the things that our Attorney General is doing, has done. So you don't want to miss this great interview with Larry Pratt. And we're also going to get some updated news about ISIS. The Armed Services Committee of the United States Senate met last week. I'm going to play a little clip from there. It's important for you to hear because the last couple of weeks we've talked about security in America, got some updates about ISIS, what's going on security. We've had United States senators on the show. We've had David Rubin from the Nation of Israel. And now today we're going to bring you up to date on that. But before we do that, let me remind you, we got an election coming up in just a few weeks, the midterm. The United States Senate is in a balance. It's, you know, which way it's going to slide, the Democrats or Republicans. A lot of money's being poured into a lot of races. So let me give you a quick update. The polling shows some interesting problems for the Republicans. A couple of races that were looking good for Republicans sort of turned to the Democratic shift, and that is North Carolina. Incumbent Senator Hagan is up against who was a leader in the state house there in North Carolina, and the Republican challenger is now falling about 5 points behind. So what's going on there? Well, one of the things is they said the long session of the state house was causing problems for Mr. Tillis that is running now, and so he's got a lot of shoring up to do to knock an incumbent out in North Carolina. Watch that race. Also, one of the Democratic strengths lately has been the race that shows an independent. Now, why am I saying that? Why are the Democrats pulling for an independent? Well, go to the state of Kansas, and there the incumbent Republican Senator Roberts, who had a tough primary that he didn't win over 50% of the primary vote, but now the Democratic nominee has dropped out of the race and to allow the independent to pull in all the Democrat votes so they can defeat Roberts. And then more than likely, he hadn't said because he's holding his cards close to his vest, but the independent says that, you know, he may caucus with the Republicans, may caucus with the Democrats. And he wants to be a free agent there in the United States Senate. Could be valuable if it comes down to 50-50 split. But Roberts has his work cut out for him because right now, in some polls, he is behind in the state of Kansas. But now, on the Republican side, there are a lot of bright stars shining. McConnell, from the minority leader in Kentucky, more money is being spent on that Senate race than any other in the country. It may be the most expensive Senate race in the history of the United States. Why? because the Democrats would like nothing better than to knock out the minority leader. So money is being poured in by the tens of millions of dollars. Some people estimate it might even be the first $100 million race for the United States Senate. $100 million for a Senate seat? Wow. Inflation, they say, is not going up. It is in the United States Senate race in Kentucky. But another race that very new poll numbers last week coming in showing that Gardner, a Republican challenger against the incumbent Senator Udall in Colorado, is getting a lead. Now, let me tell you something. We're talking about Senate races. Let me swap over and let me talk about one governor race. Bob Beaupre, former congressman, a friend of this show, Rock Splitting Politics. He's been on a couple of times. And if you remember, if you listen back to the shows, former Congressman Beaupre, he has a horse. Do you know what that horse's name is? My longtime listeners should remember. I'll tell you in a couple minutes. Now, the reason I'm bringing that race up is because I believe a bellwether, if you're going to have a Republican wave, watch Colorado, who's voted Democrat very much in the last few years. Many Democrats have won. It's been called a purple state. It used to be Republican, and it's pretty much the Democrats have controlled Colorado. But there is a backlash against the current Governor Hickenlooper, who did push gun control. So there is a lot of angst among the Second Amendment rights activists, and I surely am. When in just a few minutes we'll have Larry Pratt on, he is. But watch that race. I'm talking about the governor's race, which I believe that's going to tell us a lot about if we have a Republican wave or not. Former Congressman Bob Beaupre, watch what he's doing. Some polls showed him ahead, even by 10 points, when he's been behind for the last 3 or 4 months. Hadn't seen any polls showing him ahead. And all of a sudden, one poll showed him up 10 points. Another poll showed him up a couple of points. Is there a tide turning in Colorado? And can it be a Rocky Mountain high that just runs like a wave all the way to the East Coast and wiping out incumbent Democrats? Watch it and see. So the interesting races, a lot more. We're going to keep you posted the next few weeks. Oh, yeah, and by the way, the name of the horse that former Congressman Bob Beaupre has, the name is Doc Holliday. Now, don't you think he should be the future governor of Colorado? If nothing else, that he has a horse named Doc Holliday. But now, let me switch gears, and we're going to talk about the terror threat from ISIS. Got a little clip. Take a listen to this clip. Somebody, most of you may remember, some of you may not. It's a voice that is etched in history of rock and roll. But take a listen to this and see if it applies to ISIS and America today.
There must be some kind of way out of here. Say the joker to the thief. There's too much confusion. I can't get no relief.
Now, is Jimi Hendrix a prophet? For those who don't know, that's Jimi Hendrix. And he's playing All Along the Watchtower, an old Bob Dylan tune from the 60s. Jimi Hendrix is asking, hey, the joker said to the thief, can we get some relief? And is that not how America feels about this crisis in ISIL? ISIL is what the president calls it. ISIS is what they like to be called, Islamic State. But who in America wants to go back into Iraq? No one wants to go back in. And yet this is a threat that's growing, and it's growing because of why? Because of why? If you listened to the United States Senate Armed Services Committee, one of their members said something like this. And if you listen closely, you'll think, I've heard that before. Deja vu. If you listen to the Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, you will have heard this before. And I'll tell you why in just a minute.
Here's how I view it. The surge in Iraq ordered by President George W. Bush worked. President Obama rejected the advice of many of his top military leaders to leave a residual force. Our administration did not make every effort that it possibly could to gain a status of forces agreement in Iraq. And so we completely withdrew. And now ISIS is there controlling large parts of the territory and wreaking the havoc that the president's responding to.
Do you know whose voice that is? If you listen to Doc Holliday's Rock Split in Politics, you can identify that voice as United States Senator Roger Wicker there on the floor, well, in the Armed Services Committee. He wasn't the floor of the Senate, but the Armed Services Committee meeting with Secretary Hagel, Secretary of Defense Hagel, and those words he said was what he told us in our exclusive interview a couple of weeks ago. Go back and listen. If you did not hear the interview with United States Senator Roger Wicker, go back a couple weeks ago in the archives and listen to that show. That is just one of the reasons why you need to listen every week to Doc Holliday's Rock Split in Politics, because you heard things here before the rest of the world heard it on the United States Senate Armed Service Committee. Now listen, the ISIS situation, just like we played with Jimi Hendrix, it is confusing and it's a potential to be very messy. I'm not arguing that the president doesn't have a hard task. I appreciate the fact that he knows ISIS needs to be defeated. What troubles me is the amount of time that he allowed it to grow and rob banks and steal and multiply and behead and to rape and to cause terror and to drive entire communities out as they were massacred. Now listen, I don't blame that on Barack Obama. It's a lot of the world. But going back to what Senator Wicker said, why in the world did we not keep troops in Iraq? That was the president's decision. And now we don't have the upper hand. We got air power, but we don't have an air base in Iraq. Wouldn't it be nice to have something around Mosul or one of the air bases we had? If that would make things a lot simpler. But listen, the most important thing is how to keep Americans safe. And there are reports of ISIS having troops, having supporters in Mexico, down below the border in Mexico. And there's some reports that they may even be across the border. And we know, we talked about 80,000 children crossed the border from Mexico into the United States illegally. If you think 8, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-olds can get across the border by the tens of thousands, do you think a few renegade soldiers of ISIS can get across that porous border? Of course they can. And that is why it's so serious. Keep listening. We're going to be following this. And we got, of course, United States citizens wanting to go to Syria and Iraq to fight for ISIS. And so we're going to keep watching this. Very important. Listen to the show. We'll keep watching how that goes. Now, before we go any further, let me just remind you, you're listening to Doc Holliday's Rock Split in Politics. You're listening to us right here on WebTalkRadio.net. That's WebTalkRadio.net. Now, Larry Pratt. One of the things we'd like to talk about, the situation we got of Eric Holder, has been running roughshod in the Department of Justice for 6 years now, and it looks like he's only getting bolder. So what do you see about Eric Holder and what he's doing now?
Well, his boss doesn't have to face another election, and so I would anticipate a continuing effort to find a way to clobber the Second Amendment in general, the industry in particular, gun owners as well. He probably wasn't expecting some of the blowback that he got following his remarks that he made about the Ferguson Police Department.
Right. You know, and it just remind our listeners that, you know, the remarks he made, what exactly was Eric Holder saying?
Well, he suggested that racism was involved in the department. And when it's pretty clear that Michael Brown was shot by the officer in self-defense, not only did the officer have a broken occipital bone, eye bone, but there now is pretty significant circumstantial evidence that Brown's companion was also wailing away on the officer. The reason, from footage, video footage, they saw a bracelet on the companion, but it was it didn't end up the day on his arm, and they subsequently found it at the scene of the event by the door of the cop car. And so pretty strong circumstantial evidence that he was beaten on the officer as well.
And Larry, I have to tell you, that's news to me, and I know most of my listeners have not heard that yet. It seems like some of the things from Ferguson are dying down as far as the daily dosage of news.
And I think it's for facts like that. The fact that I think the wave was repulsed in the mainstream media when the autopsy report was disclosed saying that all the shots in Brown had been fired from in front of him. Yeah. So that's consistent with now all of the witnesses say Brown was charging the officer. Brown's companion had been the only one to have said that he was shot in the back as he was fleeing with his hands up. Now that guy has recanted and has made a statement in agreement with some dozen other witnesses.
And
so,
and
no wonder the media is letting it die down.
Yeah,
they were hoping they'd have a nice racial summer for us, and it doesn't look like the facts are going to support that.
And yet we've got Eric Holder, and I know the Obama White House sent representatives to Michael Brown's funeral, and we had an American general killed in the line of duty, and there was no representatives from this administration.
Well, after Holder, and that's right, after Holder made that slam on the Ferguson Police Department. By the way, he could have slammed them, in my opinion, on their militarized response to, at the time, peaceful protesters.
Right.
That was all too indicative of too many police departments around the country, but that was not reported on. It was Holder wanted to make them all racist, and frankly, I don't think that's going to wash, but be that as it may, Sheriff of Milwaukee County, Wisconsin, a black man, David Clark, called Holder out on this and said that what Holder had said was a slam on all law enforcement officers, and he owes us all an apology.
And
so now
course,
we've got
Holder,
this amazing guy who's a conservative. Like me, he started out as a liberal many, many, many years ago, and I'll bet his meeting of reality was a lot more difficult than was mine. Mine was a journey of ideas, whereas Officer Clark, probably had people shoot at him, swing at him, and so forth.
And he's the sheriff in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee County, which encompasses the whole city of Milwaukee.
Right.
It's a very interesting way he gets elected. He's been elected to a fourth term now, and he runs on the Democrat primary ballot line, qualifies to run there, even though he's not a member of any political party.
Okay.
But he knows that there's no action. I mean, if he were on the Republican primary line, he's not going to get hardly any votes because there's hardly any action in the Republican primary. Come general election time, people are so used to voting Democrat that they're not going to vote for him, even if he had the money to inform them that he's really their kind of guy.
Yeah.
So he runs as the nominee of the Democrat Party, and he won 4 years ago by a spread of about 5 points, this time by 4 points, a fairly comfortable margin, really. And Bloomberg went in there in that race and spent $150,000, and some liberal state, Wisconsin state group, pushed the anti-money over $500,000, and Clark still won by virtually the same margin as 4 years ago.
Well, that is an interesting story. Sometimes out of the country, you hear all the stories where liberals seem to win or get in, and especially in the big cities. So this is an interesting story that Officer Clark will come out and stand up for the law enforcement officers, whereas Eric Holder is the number one, the top law enforcement officer, and I think he let the law enforcement officers around the country down. It was a slam, just like Officer Clark said.
Indeed it was, but if I were going to have to be on one side or the other, I guarantee you I want to be on David Clark's side. The guy's at least 6'4", 6'5". He's tall and lean. Man, he looks like he could still take on somebody half his age.
Well, that's, and we need more law enforcement officers like him who are not afraid to stand up to Eric Holder.
No, he's not afraid, I don't think, to stand up to anybody. He's stood up to just about everybody that wanted to take him down. And he certainly sent Bloomberg packing, and that was probably almost as gratifying as his getting reelected. Now, I say reelected. There are a couple of very minor candidates that are on the...
So he'll be on the November ballot, is what you're saying.
He'll be on the November ballot as the only principal candidate. So the likelihood of him winning is pretty great. Okay. And we're going to notify our people anyway in Milwaukee County that please go vote for this great defender of America and the Constitution.
Well, Eric, we were talking about Eric Holder, and there's been a whole, and you've kept up with Eric Holder for the last 6 years that he's been our Attorney General. And there's at one point last year, I believe, where he Eric Holder announced that he was going to retire sometime, and he's letting people know. Is he going to ever leave the office?
He will probably not leave until his boss leaves the White House, and hopefully there'll be some way of finding out what they've been up to all this time.
Well, and what does scare me, and I think you know, I noticed where Eric Holder had some big fines in the billions of dollars, and he was setting that money over to the groups of the far left, just giving it to them. Do you know anything about that, Larry?
Not exactly, but I do know that they were all involved in trying to give very nice semi-automatic large magazine rifles to the Mexican cartel. It was called Fast and Furious.
And we still, you know, in Congress hasn't seen, seems like they've given up. Are they going to do any more investigating into that?
Well, it's in the hands of some liberals wrapped in black robes. Mm-hmm. The House voted a finding of criminal contempt, which is really, it's not called an indictment, but that's what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And lawyers working for the House of Representatives took that contempt citation over to the federal D.C. court and filed it as an indictment, which is the way it's supposed to be done. And that was going on 2 years ago. Obviously, those liberal judges don't want to have anything to do with something like that, even though that would be the proper thing to do. And oh, and by the way, if it ever happened that he were convicted in that court, there is a jail cell up on Capitol Hill, so they could actually accommodate the Attorney General themselves.
Now, I've never heard that before. So they actually have a jail cell on Capitol Hill.
I've never seen it, but those that work up there have told me, hey, buddy, it's there.
Well, you've given me some news I didn't know about, and I'm sure my listeners didn't know that. So that's good to know. Like I said, it'd be hard to see the judges in the D.C. area ever convicting Eric Holder.
Now, I have an idea on how to get them to get off the dime.
Okay, tell us about that.
The House of Representatives has the power of the purse. And on any of these appropriation bills that are moving through, especially at this time of year, because we're coming up on the end of the fiscal year, end of September, simply put an amendment to the effect that none of these funds, in whatever budget you're amending, may be used for paying salaries for the federal D.C. court until they have heard the Eric Holder criminal contempt case.
Well, that That would really help out, and the big thing.
I think it'd be like lighting a fire. I think they would not want to sit there all that long.
Well, if you could just get it through the Senate, which you might be able to, like you said, in this time of big bills, where they just got to they're wanting to get out of Washington to go campaign in a hurry.
Well, if it were done after the election, if there's some kind of a continuing resolution that comes due the day after the November 4th election, then one of the major problems would be dealt with automatically. Boehner probably has to wear Depends when people talk about challenging the White House, fighting over anything at all. Boehner doesn't want to fight. He talks like a conservative, but he's a wuss. And after the election, his main concern about fighting would be removed. There's, you know, Obama's not going to run again. Everybody is elected who's been elected. You know, it's nothing's going to change the elections at that point. And that would be the time to make the push. And if they wanted to really play safe, wait until January, whatever, 20, or whenever they swear in the new Senate, and very likely there's going to be a lot more Republicans in that Senate, 6, 7, 8, tends to be the range of the guesstimates at the moment, then they would pretty much be able to put themselves in agreement with a House measure that cut the funds from that D.C. federal court. I kind of think that there would probably be some quick action.
Well, I like that idea, and you know that there is a good chance Republicans could take the Senate, and they, it'd be very easy to get this all the way through at that point. Do you see any other things that would be could possibly happen if the Republicans did take the Senate and keep the House?
They could defund all sorts of things. None of these, for instance, in the Justice Department budget, none of these funds may be used for anything at the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives. For the EPA, none of these funds can be used pursuant to executive order, boom, 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 where they've gone after coal mines and just made our energy costs unnecessarily expensive. We just say, okay, guys, you like making all these draconian regulations. We like making all these draconian cuts.
And what you're saying, that's what so many people, they're not talking and discussing that out in the news, and because I think the liberals fear it, and the conservatives, I'm not sure they know how to do that. But you've seen legislation go through, and what you're talking about is very feasible. Of course, Obama can veto it, but all of a sudden, then that would make Obama the one shutting down the government.
Then he's shutting it down, and you're not going to see me taking medicine for heartburn.
Yeah, and so, you know, that's what I've heard so many conservatives say. Well, if the Republicans get in, it'll be the same old, they won't, you know, and like you're saying, Boehner sometimes doesn't, unless he's pushed against the wall, he's not really conservative. But it's very important for Republicans to win the Senate, because things can be done. If they will or not, that's another question, but they will have at least the option to do some of these things you just mentioned.
It would be quite possible that it will likely be maybe a dozen or two new Republicans. And I think the ones that are there are going to be further emboldened to put some heat under Boehner. It was done once. They really pretty much forced him to stand tight, at least for a day, on the debt limit. And that's when Obama shut down parts of the government and made it so veterans couldn't see their monuments and the names of their friends on the wall here in the mall and the district. But I think you've already put it the way it would end up being put. If the bill, it's not just a fight within the Congress over that debt limit, but if it's actually an appropriations bill on the president's desk with these cuts in them, none of these funds may be used, etc., then if the president doesn't sign the bill, even a low-information voter can figure out, oh, the president shut the government down.
Right. And then another thing for our listeners, they may not realize when you're talking about budget and spending bills, taxes, you don't have to have, you know, you can't filibuster those. You just have to have 50% majority. You have to have 51 votes, I believe.
Well, and of course, if they want to stop a budget bill, of course, that'll have a pretty quick result, and that's okay with me, too. In other words, they want to shut down more than I do.
Yeah.
Well, I'd like to shut it all down.
But you're right. I mean, as conservatives, it would put conservatives in the position, you know, sort of like Clint Eastwood, go ahead and make my day, shut it down.
Exactly. That's I think, the script that we ought to be pushing. And there are Republicans in the House that are eager to do that. And I get the point about the optics of this before the November election. Okay, I'll take that. But then once we're past the election, don't talk to me about that again.
Yeah, it's time for action. I mean, I've heard it, and you've heard it, all conservatives heard it, but we can't do it now. We don't have the numbers. We don't have the Senate. But if everybody work hard and get the Senate, I would expect some draconian action like he just mentioned, and it could well be done with some good leadership.
So that's what we're looking at. Between now and then, it's just a matter of going out and doing everything we can to get some of these tough guys elected who are willing to take on even the leadership of their own party. And there are Republicans in the caucus that will do that. When this debt limit measure was before the caucus, Boehner went in saying how unwise it would be to stick to the current debt limit and look for cuts.
Mm-hmm.
He came out with the same smile on his face saying, we're going to stick to the debt limit that we have. We just can't afford to keep spending.
Mm-hmm.
And for about a day, you know, the way that came about, I asked a congresswoman, what was the vote in caucus? And it was something like 139 to whatever is left.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a pretty heavy majority of the caucus wanted blood.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, Boehner really had no choice.
Well, we just got another minute or two here, Larry. And can you take us to any, I'm looking at the different Senate races, but can you take us to some that are close or almost close that gun owners should be able to go into and maybe help push a Republican to a win?
A number are the there's a couple Republicans running against Mary Landrieu. They have it's called a jungle primary.
Right. Louisiana's different from any other state. They all throw them in there together, and then if nobody gets 50% on November
on election general election day, everywhere else is their primary day.
Yeah, right.
And it's at least still academically conceivable that Mary Landrieu is not going to be on the ballot, or maybe her name gets left on, but apparently she really doesn't live in the state. She's become such a creature of the District of Columbia that, as far as people have been able to find, the only real estate she owns is up in the District of Columbia.
Now that is interesting.
So that's working its way out in court. I wouldn't expect, again, judges to do the right thing, but even the coverage of such a challenge is helpful. There's a Congressman Cassidy who's okay, who's running in that same jungle primary, and then there's a guy that we've endorsed called Bob Manis. He's a veteran, and we think he would be pretty much an addition to the Ted Cruz school of political street fighting. There's one that's kind of a gimme. We saw this guy Ben Sasse. We got behind him in the primary in Nebraska, and he won. And the consensus seems to be that he's on his way to Washington. It's a very Republican state. He articulates the issues very well. So it looks like Ted Cruz is going to get an ally there.
And that's a big, big plus if we can get some more like Ted Cruz, not afraid to stand the ground.
Exactly, exactly right. We saw that Cruz has, we have seen, continue to see that he's been changing the dynamics of the Senate, and he hasn't even been in the Senate for 2 years. Oh,
I know, that is remarkable, isn't it?
No official office, just the force of his personality and his integrity, and he's super smart, and his ability to articulate things. When the gun ban that Feinstein wanted was actually turned down in Senate committee, controlled by Democrats, when the vote was all over, Cruz is on the committee with Feinstein, and he asked the question somewhat like this: would the senior senator from California be able to explain to me that since her view of the Second Amendment is that it doesn't cover all guns, would it be also the case that, in her view, the First Amendment doesn't cover all speech, that the Fourth Amendment doesn't cover all houses?
And that's his intelligence.
She had a fit. She's read the Constitution. She doesn't need to be lectured by the senator from Texas. She didn't have much she could say coming back other than, "You've made me mad."
Well, Larry, it's been great talking to you again, and thank you for coming to Rock Splitting Politics and giving us your insight, and we appreciate that.
Thanks for having me. I appreciate you.
That was Larry Pratt. I hope you enjoyed that interview. I learned a lot. I know you did, too. Next week, we are going to be talking some about global warming. Dare I say that, could global warming be a myth? Well, stay tuned next week, and we've got some information on that you need to hear. See you then.
Thanks for joining us today, and remember to listen again next week for another edition of Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics. You can order Ed's new book, Doc Holliday's Rock Splitting Politics, Tea Party versus the Status Quo, by clicking on the book cover right in front of you on the screen. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next week.